And this episode today is brought to you by Casper Mattresses.
Oh, buddy.
I'm just going to say, are you still sleeping on your Casper mattress?
Of course. I just got off the road, and so I've been traveling a lot, sleeping on hotel mattresses. And when I come home to this mattress, it is great. I love this sponsor because every night I sleep in my own bed, I'm like, I'm so grateful these guys like podcasting.
Yeah.
Because it is, and
now, did it get softer now that you've been on it for a little bit?
They tell you that in the information when you get it. They're like, give your body some time, a couple weeks.
But you didn't necessarily believe it.
No, I don't believe anybody.
Chris. Yeah.
I don't believe you when you're talking.
You needed proof.
I needed proof. I needed proof that you are who you say you are. I don't know that house next to this garage is yours.
That's why I never let you go in it.
Okay, now I need a deed. Yeah. I need to see a deed with your name on it. But yeah, so the Casper mattress, it is, and I get such great sleep from it. I cannot say this enough. And it was 100 days to try it out. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know of any other mattress company that gives you 100 days to try it out. And if you don't like it, just send it back to them. Because at first, I got to be honest, when they came to us, I was like, so wait, they ship mattresses in the mail? Like,
right.
What is this?
And it came in like a tube or something, didn't it?
It comes in a box, and you cut it open, and then it kind of slowly unfolds.
Right.
And then,
like a raft.
Like a raft, exactly. I'm like, well, this is my castaway.
Yeah.
I became friends with a volleyball, yes. and then I slept on this mattress. But no, I cannot say enough. It is risk-free. My mattress was like, you know, the queen size is $850, I believe, or something in that neighborhood. They're very reasonably priced, and it's a great night's sleep. Like, if you're in the market for a mattress and you don't want it, my last mattress cost me $2,000, the one
right.
before this one,
mm-hmm.
and it was nice, it was worth it, but that's a lot of money.
Yes,
and this one, I cannot say enough about Casper. So.
Well, and, you know, one of the things we love, too, is when a sponsor actually gives the fans of the podcast a mm-hmm. discount. So make sure you go to casper.com/comedyfilmnerds. Use the promo code comedyfilmnerds, and you will get $50 off.
Which is, considering, like, a twin mattress is $500, and then the king, their biggest mattress is $950.
Right.
That's a pretty...
Knock it down to $9.
Knock it down to $9, kids. Get the big king. So, you know, that's a pretty solid deal.
They got the Sea King, the California
they
King.
They got the California King, and they've
the
also...
The regular king.
They got the regular king, all different kinds of royalty.
Yeah.
You got a full house if you buy all their mattresses. Yeah, and it's risk-free, man. And if you don't like it, send it back, and the shipping is free. So there's no
risk.
There's no risk. So go for it, you guys, and it's a cool way to support the site. If you're in the market for a mattress, you're helping us, and you're getting a great product.
So Casper, CASPER.com/comedyfilmnerds, and use the promo code comedyfilmnerds, 50 beans off.
50 beans off. Sleep, my children. Hey, welcome to Comedy Film Nerds, special themed episode.
This is a special themed episode.
Very special themed.
Or is subtitled the vacation episode.
Yes, one of us or both of us is out of town, and we recorded this at a date.
Yeah, 4 years ago.
4 years ago. It's really good. It's a time travel episode.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into classic films, mainly classic comedy movies, but let's introduce our guest.
Yes, first time on the program.
And
I opened for this gentleman many years ago in Philadelphia when they used to have a Funny Bone there.
Wow.
100 years ago.
And I know he doesn't remember you.
Yes. Of course not.
I hope he doesn't.
I don't remember me from that time.
It'd be awful if he did.
Yeah.
Because then you did something really stupid.
Exactly.
You're like,
if
you're
remember
that.
Oh, I remember you. Yeah.
You're that asshole that brought like a toaster on stage.
Yeah.
And had some stupid outfit.
Yeah, and then he just storms out of the garage.
Yeah, like, I hated
how
it.
Dare you?
Why are you still in comedy?
Ladies and gentlemen, Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah, I'm hoping to forget you right after I leave.
Yeah.
We hope most of our guests do
yes.
that.
Yeah. That's how we get repeat guests.
Yeah. We just want to either be horrible or kind of just not memorable.
Yeah, God, I have no recollection in that episode. I must have had a good time.
Every time I drive through Sherman Oaks, I think of movies, but I don't know why.
It's weird. I'm just going to keep driving.
So, Gilbert, you have a podcast.
Wow, you know about it.
I know. I'm one of the four guys downloading it.
Yeah. So. We were guests on it.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes. You are so good on that one.
We produce your show.
Yes.
Your studio every week.
You've done a bang-up job. I was... You jumped in. I was just about to tell you how terrific both of you are and how I couldn't do it without you. Yeah, Gilbert Gottfried's amazing, colossal podcast, it's called, and you can hear it on GilbertGottfried.com. Now, what's the other information? There's a Facebook, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, and my Twitter is at Real Gilbert.
And Sean Merrick, who brought him over here, said, and it's on iTunes.
Yes.
As well.
What was the other thing I left out?
Sideshownetwork.tv.
I can't remember. See, I wish the information was given to some announcer that could just say it, and I'll go, oh, here he is doing that darn plug. Yes. And I don't have to be the one. Like, he's the bad guy.
Like a good cop, bad cop?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Hey, I know you're an all right kid. Why don't you talk to me? My partner's a little crazy.
He's just strong. You better listen. You better listen.
I'm going to be here at this date. I'm going to be here at this date and iTunes.com.
Sideshownetwork.tv, yeah. You punks.
Yeah. I'm going to put a hurting on you. Oh. Yeah.
Look, you better do what he says. Yeah. He gets mad. I don't want him to.
He's going
to
ask me to leave the room. Then I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I've been dealing with you young punks my whole life.
Like the time you opened for me in Philly.
Yeah. But on my podcast, on his podcast, that's the announcer who's, I specialize, I like to focus on old Hollywood. So I just interviewed Lee Merriweather,
who was
Catwoman, and Julie Newmar. Who was Catwoman?
He was also Catwoman.
And Adam West, Batman, of course. And Roger Corman.
You had Roger Corman on the show?
Yes.
Oh, man, what was that like?
That was great, because, you know, he's the king of, D-movies.
Yeah.
And
his book is, how I made, 100 movies in Hollywood without losing a dime?
Oh,
something like that. Yeah.
And he told us one movie he made was he was going to go out and with some friends and play tennis. And then he got up that morning and it was raining. So he decided to make a movie.
Instead?
Yes. And he found out Boris Karloff owed him 2 days' work from a previous movie. So he called up Boris Karloff and this totally unknown Jack Nicholson, and they were in this movie called La Terra, and to this day,
because it rained.
Yes.
That's so I love that.
Yeah, and to this day, nobody knows the plot of the movie. They just know there was a castle left over at some studio from a previous film.
I saw this movie. I think this movie is on Snag. Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, it makes no sense. Yeah,
And I just ran into, at some event, Dick Miller, who was in, one of those guys in every one. He did 1,000 Corman films. And he said to me that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
They had Boris Karloff, and they said, okay, walk down this hallway. Now look in that door.
Yeah.
Now walk down that hallway and turn around.
And the castle had a lever on the bottom where the dungeon was, and that would just flood it from the ocean?
Yes.
Like, why would you build a lever in the bottom of your castle to flood it?
I always loved that in the old movies. They used to have the lever that blew up the castle.
Right, yeah.
You know, they had that in The Black Cat and son of Frankenstein. No, it's the liver that blows up the cat. Well, why did you? Wouldn't that be a stupid thing? Yeah.
Well, now on IMDb, it says directors, Roger Corman, and then it says Francis Ford Coppola, and then there's three other people that are uncredited.
Francis
Ford Coppola's uncredited, Monty Hellman's uncredited, and Jack Hill and Jack Nicholson all apparently directed this movie.
Well, they each took a day, you know.
Yeah, they had to direct their own scenes apparently because it's just like
one was taking a nap and then the other would direct.
Now, did Roger Corman? Did you guys talk about Little Shop of Horrors?
Yeah, we talked about that. We talked about a few things.
Don't realize that there's an original movie that's not a musical.
Little
Shop of Horrors. And, can you look that up? What year
and
that was?
Nicholson's in that, too.
Yeah.
As the patient, the crazy dentist.
And he's hilarious in that movie. As the masochistic dental patient.
That's 1960 was the original.
It's like, oh, no Novocaine.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. Now,
Dick Miller's in that movie as well.
Oh, yes. And there's a scene in The Terror where Dick Miller has to do one of those scenes that's awful in every movie where they have to explain basically to the audience. Those are always clumsy scenes.
I know. The exposition scenes?
Yes. where they act like they're talking to the other person in the scene, but it's really for the audience to take notes. And he does...
Or in this case, maybe for the director.
Yes. And he explains. And when he explains what it is, you're more confused than when you were before.
An anti-exposition scene?
Well, it's just like I remember I was watching this movie that where Kevin Spacey was Bobby Darin. I forget what it was. It was
Spacey was Bobby Darin.
Yes.
Pulling this up immediately.
Yeah. Like something. The
Are you thinking of Usual Suspects?
Yes.
Kaiser Soze saying Bobby Darin.
I think about the sea or on the sea.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Beyond the Sea.
He
played Bobby Darin. It's 2004.
Directed by
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, and he's a real life singer, Bobby Darin. And the guy playing his manager is John Goodman. And John Goodman has a scene that you have to feel bad for him because Spacey, as Bobby Darin, says, "My career is nothing. It's never gone anywhere." And John Goodman has to dramatically go, "What are you kidding, Bobby? For 3 years straight, in 1962, you were the top performer in Vegas. You've already been nominated for an Academy Award. You've got 7 gold albums." And it's like... And it's like you're expecting him to look at the screen and go, "You're taking all this down?"
Yeah.
You
know,
it's
like
so now...
But we also had... Weird Al Yankovic, Bob Saget. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of your favorite, old Hollywood stories or
comedy movies? Like, what do you love about old Hollywood comedy movies?
God, I don't know. There's some that I remember growing up. They had all the old movies on TV, which probably weren't even that old when I was a kid.
They were first-run syndication.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like it's so weird when you talk to someone and they go, "Oh, you know, I really love those old movies, like Titanic."
I know. It's like you tell someone, like, I used to watch the Three Stooges on TV after school. And I'm like, "Well, what are you talking about?" You know, they have no idea because they don't play on TV anymore. You have to find them on DVD or online. But they're just not available the way they used to be.
Yeah, I used to watch the Three Stooges every day. In New York, we had Officer Joe Bolton. And he was like the friendly cop Boot Swingers, Knights de Corinne, and present the Three Stooges movie.
That's great.
Officer Joe, like, stay in school.
Yes.
And smack your buddy in the face.
Yeah. So.
And, you know, and it took the studio a long time to release all those shorts, like, in chronological order. Like, it used to be, like, you could get, like, a couple together. Now you can get the whole set. And if you actually watch them in order from when they were made, like, I have the set. Yeah. I haven't watched them all yet.
Yeah.
But they're fantastic. In fact, they were so satirical. Even, like, I mean, obviously they're slapstick. But, like, one of the early ones, they were talking about going to Hollywood because they were vaudeville performers. And they're on a train. They're, like, hobos in a boxcar. Yeah. And, like, well, yeah, well, Hollywood's run by morons. What's three more going to make a difference? And this was in the 30s. You know, they were already biting the hand that fed them. And it was, it's interesting because you don't see that kind of programming anymore. No one makes 15, 20 minute comedy shorts like, to play before feature films anymore. That's a bygone era.
And they did two, that mocked Hitler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which before anybody did it. One was, those Nazi spies, and the other was I'll never heil again.
Yeah. And Mo played a great Hitler.
He looked like it.
Yeah.
That was what was so funny about
just
it.
Just added a mustache. Yeah. That was it. So
Mo was probably meaner.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that joke was made on set.
Yeah,
I can imagine.
Yes. Yeah. Behind his back.
Yeah, exactly. So now let's talk about some classic comedy films. Like, you're a big Marx Brothers fan.
Yes.
As am I. And what are some of your favorite Marx Brothers movies?
Well, it's funny. It's like, that's another thing. When they do, like, box sets now of the Marx Brothers, they'll have, like, Go West, The Big Store, Love Happy, and it's like, so if
those
you
are the older, the
those
older ones.
Yeah, yeah, those are the those are the ones, the last couple of ones they made,
the 40s.
And so now, if someone got those box sets, they would go, "Well, what's so funny about the Marx Brothers?"
Because it was no Duck Soup.
Yeah. Duck Soup. Well, Duck Soup was their best. They're absolute craziest.
I agree with that. I thought Duck Soup was... I mean, I've watched that over and over, and it's so funny, and the jokes, they still make you laugh.
It's funny, like, I was watching, actually, last night on PBS, they were doing Dick Cavett talking about the end of the Vietnam War and all of these these big interviews that he had on there, and they had Groucho Marx, who's at that point in his 60s or something like that, on Dick Cavett, and... He was clearly like, I'm not happy with what's going on with this war, and I don't like it. But then, would still the way he would say things, he was getting laughs.
Yeah,
like, and not in a like, whoa. He was like, I just don't, you know, I can't do an impression, but he'd just be like,
it's the Vietnam War, which I don't understand why we're sending troops.
Yeah, exactly. And he would ask that and say that, and you're like, wow, here's this guy very serious. And then he would just go, I was like, and then he'd throw like a Tet Offensive joke or something. Right. And you're just like, this is amazing.
We went to Vietnam because Chico needed the money.
Yes, that was why Chico needed the money.
He was a gambler. He never had any money.
But that's the thing, I think what happens when some people go, I don't like black and white, or I don't get it, or the comedy's too broad. Sometimes people say that. I go, you're watching it from a distance. You've got to watch these movies.
You can't watch it with contemporary glasses.
No, you've got to watch it and get in and watch it close. There's these subtle jokes. There's these political statements that they're making that are so like, first you have to kind of know what's going on historically at that era.
Yeah.
But
you can see the building blocks of which comedies that came after, basically they influenced those movies. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't have the modern comedies without these. So you're kind of going back to the beginning. Like, I remember with Duck Soup, like you're saying, Graham, is they were satirizing not only like war movies, but also big grand musicals.
Oh, yeah.
And it was an art form back then that we don't really have now, because I don't know about attention spans. Like, you basically have a 5 to 10 minute plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they make it work.
Oh, yeah.
They literally make it work because it's so filled with jokes and gags and all this other
and
stuff going
the
on.
The idea that so much of it is just so nonsensical.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, he's like prosecuting Chico in the big trial.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he turns and is defending him just because it gets a laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny when you say that about how they lead to later things. One guy was writing about the X-Files, and he said, you know, the X-Files is great, and it's so much better than old, ridiculous crap like Twilight Zone.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
And, yeah. and in his favor.
Was that a 19-year-old writer?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And in his favor, the producer of X-Files said, you know, I appreciate the compliment, but there wouldn't be an X-Files if it wasn't for the Twilight Zone. Exactly.
Yeah, when people miss, they just don't understand, like, you know, whatever. I've heard people go, oh, you know, listen to, like, Bill Haley, and they're like, it's such simple rock and roll. I go, yeah, but that's what everyone is standing on those shoulders. Yeah,
those are building blocks.
Of any of this. Mm-hmm. And if you look like Duck Soup, like, I'm going to just read for anyone who's never seen it. This is the description on IMDb. So Rufus T. Firefly is named president/dictator of bankrupt Fredonia and declares war on neighboring Sylvania over the love of wealthy Mrs. Teasdale. If that's not talking about corporate governments.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Well, listen to that description. They named the neighboring country they invade after a popular television set. Sylvania was making TVs at the time, and the TV era was just starting to happen. And it's called Bankrupt Fredonia. He's the president/dictator.
Yeah.
I mean, they're getting into, and you got to understand, the 30s, you know, after the Depression, there's a lot of people that were not happy with how this government handled it. That's when, like, socialism and people were wanting to be, now whatever you think of communism, but the people back then believed communism in its purest form. Actually, on paper, it doesn't sound like a bad plan. You know what I mean? Like, everybody gets a job, everybody eats. And so they're really in this, and again,
you
in
mean
the
like
most
socialism?
Like socialism. Well, communism means it means communal.
Yeah.
It means commune. That's where it comes from. It's never been practiced correctly.
Yeah.
People just use it as like, hey, I'm going to gain all the power. And, you know.
No, this is what you wanted.
Yeah, this is what you wanted. But I mean, so if you understand when these movies were being made, and yes, it was escapism from the Depression, but they were still, in the silliest way, poking so much like social commentary and political commentary that it's like, wow. I mean, what they're saying is, oh, governments are all corporate and corrupt, and they invade for money. And wow, does that sound familiar today?
Oh, mm-hmm. I remember reading, like, Roger Ebert said that his father was a big Marx Brothers fan and would take him to Marx Brothers movies. And whenever they'd say a line on screen, he would kind of turn to him. The father would look at him with this glow in his eyes, like, you see what they just did? You see what they got away with? You know, like, it was sneaky. Mm-hmm. What it would, and that's what they forget. You know, it's like back then, that was really, they were really
edgy.
Yeah.
It was, well, yeah, also, too, you got to, like you say, why it was so, it doesn't seem that edgy to us now because you can swear and say whatever, but the language and the material, I mean, you were so scrutinized. Anything, every frame, every word, like, they could shut you down. So you had to walk such a tightrope to get any of these things in there. And the fact that they did, which is why Roger Ebert's dad was doing that.
Yeah.
Saying, and you got on, if you, it, so when I say this, if you go into watching these movies with that knowledge and that knowledge of the history of when they came out, it suddenly makes them amazing. Like, it really,
right.
You know.
Go into watching these movies with the right perspective. And the other thing is, they're shorter. You know, they're all shorter.
Yes.
It's a smaller time investment. Now, what's another Marx Brothers movie that you really liked before the 40s movies, like in the 30s in their heyday?
Oh, well, the other, my second favorite would be Horse Feathers.
Okay.
Where he's the dean of the school.
And, oh, yeah, yeah. That's another really good one.
And I think he's Wagstaff there.
Yeah, Quincy Adams Wagstaff,
yes.
The president of Huxley University, hires Bumblers, Bravelli, and Pinky to help his school win the big football game against rival Darwin University. Like, now they're just, you know, they're just spoofing big-time college athletics, which the time in the 30s, college football was that and boxing were the two biggest sports in this country, and they were making big money. And that's like there was corruption happening back then. And we think, you know, we always look back. It's funny. We look at today's college football. It's this billion-dollar industry, and it's so corrupt. And we look back then as the golden era. There was corruption back then. There was, come on, man.
Like, well, in Horse Feathers, Chico is running a speakeasy.
Yeah.
And they've got that long scene where he doesn't allow Groucho in. Because he has to say swordfish. That's the hoarders. And there's this old reference there. He says, "Well, I'll give you a hint. It's the name of a fish," and he goes, Chico says, "Well, it's the name of a fish," and Groucho goes, "Is it haddock?" And he goes, "Hey, that's so funny, I got a haddock too." And he goes, "What do you take for a haddock?" And he goes, "Well, sometimes I take aspirin, sometimes I take a Calomel." And you go, so obviously Calomel was some kind of headache medication.
Yeah. Right.
Or there's like also in there, there's where they say the dean is waiting in the hallway. He's waxing Roth. And Groucho goes, "Well, tell Roth to wax the dean for a while." But waxing Roth, I guess, was a way of saying you're getting upset back then. Waxing Roth.
There's definitely slang and stuff that we don't have anymore.
Yeah. Yes.
that they use. But
Horse Feathers definitely made me laugh out loud.
And you also have, too, with the Marx Brothers, is they were very specific characters no matter what movie they were in. Mm-hmm. There was literally never like, "Oh, well, you're playing this..." They were always a character playing a character in every movie.
Yeah. And then, see, now I always thought when Night at the Opera, that was their biggest hit.
Mm, I mean, Lucille Ball in it too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But Night at the Opera, that's Irving Spielberg, Irving Thalberg took over for them. And there are, Duck Soup, I think, is what lost them their contract with Paramount because no one saw it. No one liked it back then.
Wow.
And then
it's one of their best movies.
Yes, it's yeah. And it's like Irving Thalberg put them in Night at the Opera, which was a major hit. And I think when I watch Night at the Opera, that looks like the beginning of the end for them, because they look like they had a leash on them.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And they were doing things for a reason. They were helping out their romantic couple. And so that was always...
They weren't sort of creating anarchy. That's one of their best things is in those other movies we were talking about. They were kind of ruining everything.
Oh, yes. You know what I mean? Yes.
Like, that was their whole thing, is they would take these established... iconic parts of the society and ruin them. And so when they're playing along, it's like, well...
And that doesn't work as well when you're supporting characters.
Right.
You have to kind of be in the driver's seat
so
for the film.
It's so weird that comedians used to be supporting characters in their own movies.
Yeah. Right, right.
Like, the romantic leads were the leads, and they were just these wacky guys who would pop up.
Well, let me support the guy and the girl as they met and fell in love.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this. How did watching these movies or when did influence you to be like, "I want to be a comedian. I want to start doing this"?
Yeah, God. I don't know. I'd watch all these old movies and old TV shows and like those variety shows and movies. That's like, you know, got me in that mindset where my podcast is. It's like old Hollywood. I'm just fascinated by it. And I don't know. I started to imitate people I saw in movies and stuff like that. And I just eventually, when I first used to perform, like at open mic nights, I was doing mainly imitations.
Of who?
Like Boris Karloff and Humphrey Bogart. Even back then, my act was dated. You know, it's like...
You started with an outdated act. Yeah. That's awesome.
I was on stage at 15 doing stuff that Rich Little I would be ashamed of.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's awesome.
And how come you don't see impressionists anymore?
I know. To me, it's like the only time somebody does an impression is
like when Saturday
Kevin,
Night
when
Live.
We had Kevin Pollak on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
We always demand that he does.
We made him do our ad read as Christopher Walken.
As Christopher Walken. But no, it's funny. Like the only
if we had one right now, we would have you do it as Boris Karloff.
Oh yeah. and then it would have to be where I turn around with my back to the audience, mess my hair up, lift my collar up, and then go. It might go something like this.
I remember, I remember when I saw you on TV do your impression of Dice. That was one of the, Dice was at his zenith, and then you just did your thing. you just made sounds. The first 2 minutes, you just do the thing with the cigarette. You wave your arms. God damn
what
it.
What are you, Wahoma?
You just a Dice.
Yeah, I was talking to this broad. She goes...
You did that for 5 minutes.
And then I remember you did David Brenner too for a long time.
Johnny. You know, I remember years ago seeing an impressionist just at one of the clubs, and they always had like some premise to hold the voices, like, oh, this is the Hollywood classroom or the Hollywood press conference.
Wouldn't it be weird if Arnold Schwarzenegger was your dentist? Like, opens your mouth wide, like some horrible... Oh.
And this guy was doing a thing where his car breaks down on the highway. And so each impression he'd introduce by going... Why, there's Jack Nicholson. Maybe he'll help.
I love a horrible...
Yes. There's Kirk Douglas. Maybe he'll help.
Hey, Anne Margaret, do you know how to change a tire?
Oh, that's great.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So, like, I wonder who finally changed the tire.
Yeah, I don't know. Who fixed the car?
Was it Jim Nabors?
Was it Jim Nabors? Oh my God, Carol Channing. Yeah.
Maybe she'll help.
Spark plugs are a girl's best friend. Thanks, Carol. Just the dumbest.
Oh my
now,
God.
No one's doing impressions like that, but now I'll see like a comic will have, anytime a comic does an obscure impression of somebody, they just like bust out like a Richard Dreyfuss impression or something. That I absolutely love that.
Oh yeah,
because it just comes out of nowhere.
It would have to be from Jaws.
Yeah, and I mean there are still people who have an ear for voices, like, and they'll be on comedy shows like Saturday Night Live and stuff. But the whole premise of going, imagine if Al Pacino worked at McDonald's. I think it would go a little something like this. And I love the ones that can't do the actor, so they'll do a character that the actor played. They'll say, like, imagine if your dentist was Dustin Hoffman, the way he was in Rain Man.
But it's also that thing we would always say, too. You knew it was a shitty impression when they would have to say who they were in the introduction. Yeah. Because then it'd just be like, Ron Reagan here.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to introduce themselves.
Because if you just went, hey, how you doing? No one would go, you're doing Ron Reagan.
It's an old lady.
Yeah. It's a guy with Alzheimer's.
Let's move on to, I want to talk about Abbott and Costello movies.
Oh, yes.
Because I, when I was printing out the list, I forgot how many movies they actually did.
Oh, they were cranking out, what, two a year?
It was crazy. And I'm looking at them, too, and not only are they in all these different situations, but eventually they did a Marvel Universe crossover kind of thing with the Keystone Cops. And all of the Universal Monsters, and all of a sudden they were in every single universe. There was an Abbott and Costello movie.
One of my all-time favorite comedies, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yes.
Mm. That's a great one. Mm-hmm.
The thing I love...
Just Frankenstein, too. Dracula, the Wolfman, they're all in that movie.
And Lugosi is back as Dracula. Yeah. And like Hollywood had given up. They were using John Carradine as Dracula and everyone else but Lugosi. And when Lugosi appears as Dracula, you go, oh, this is what was missing from all those other Dracula films.
Well, no, the thing that was cool about that was they kept it just scary enough.
Yes.
That it actually enhanced the jokes. Because it wasn't just like, whoa, I'm a wolf man. It was like, oh, no, these are these actual guys who were terrifying on the big screen, whatever, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And now, so they're still bringing their skill as horror, black and white horror film actors, which was an amazing skill that they possessed.
Yes.
And then so it made the jokes like land, to me, even harder because you were kind of like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You were a little scared.
And the movie was respectful of the monsters.
Yes.
They didn't make them, like, stupid.
No. Well, I think, too, I this is something it'd be great to have on your podcast to know, but I always got the feeling, like, they went, oh, we love Bela Lugosi. We love Boris Karloff. So, like, how can, you know, I'm sure they were just respectful on the set.
Yeah.
And they were like, we're going to be the idiots. Right. You guys
do what you do.
You do your awesome thing and let us be the morons
in
this.
And Lon Chaney Jr. was back as the Wolf Man.
Yeah. It was an all-star monster cast in the Abbott and Costello film. And that was one of their most famous ones, too.
And they brought on, they started that whole meet and go to.
And then each one got worse than the other.
Yeah. Then they got bad.
When they did Meet the Mummy.
Well, literally, you're making. I'm looking at 1941. They released four films.
Oh, wow.
Four films. It was Buck Privates, In the Navy, Hold That Ghost, and Keep 'Em Flying. No one makes four movies in a year.
They used to churn out movies.
Yes.
They had that whole thing where. Mm-hmm. Like, they could, if they wanted to make it in a day, they'd make it in a day.
Yeah, you're under contract. We're paying you whether you're making a movie today or not. So guess what? You're going to be making a movie.
Oh, yes. And a lot of times, too, they would have an actor doing three movies at once. And they'd have to run across the set.
Oh, yeah, you'd be like, you're doing a musical in the morning, then you're chasing a guy in the afternoon, and at night you're dancing.
You're on an airplane.
Yeah, exactly. You're on a cruise ship.
Now, I remember watching Abbott Costello as a kid, too, thinking that, like, you know, Costello was the funny one, and Abbott's like, wow, he's so boring. Yeah. Why is he even in this? And then as you get older and start to appreciate it, you realize... Costello would never be as funny without the straight man.
People, that drives me nuts when I'll hear people... And it's the same thing, like writers who don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
And it's like when you're a real Abbott and Costello fan, the one you're laughing at the most is Abbott.
Right.
Because he's great in those.
Yeah. When you're a kid, you love Moe the most. Yeah. Then when you get older, you like Larry.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Because he's the everyman.
Yes.
Imagine if Larry was your dentist. Yes.
It might go a little something like this. Imagine if Larry was your dentist, but he talked like Al Pacino did in Scarface.
Say hello to my little friends.
That's the drill sound, you know, from the dentist.
Get a free download from Audible.
Wow, he's doing our ad read?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And Abbott made everything so matter of fact that made it so great. Like the Who's On First.
Right.
It's like what's so funny about it when you watch it, because Abbott is so good. In your mind, you're going, well, why is Costello so stupid that he doesn't know who's on first, what's on second? Yeah, I know our real names.
Right.
Yeah. And there were these asides that Abbott would have. One part that cracks me up on Who's On First is, you know, Costello says, you know, I'm a pretty good catcher myself. And Abbott goes, so they tell me.
Yeah.
And I think it's just so funny.
He's got so many of those that if you're not paying attention, which a lot of times
yes.
he says them while most people are probably laughing at Lou.
Yeah.
Costello just landed, everyone's laughing, and then he throws a little like, so they tell me. Like he's a bunch of those where you're like, oh, he just kind of slammed him or he whatever joke he's making.
And in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, there's a one part Costello is trying to tell him that the monsters are there. And you know, right. and he's waving his arms in the air like Frankenstein and Dracula and going, and doing that like And he's waving, you know, doing the arm, the Frankenstein arms outstretched, and Dracula hypnotizing someone. And Abbott at one point just goes, okay, put your hands down.
Enough of the silly business, kid. Like,
and you know, we're far enough removed from these movies too that, like, if I read the titles, it sounds like we're doing a bit.
Oh yes,
these are actually
yes.
where they are. Yeah. Like Lost in Alaska, Abbott and Costello Meet Captain Kidd, Abbott and Costello Go to Mars.
Oh yeah,
Abbott and Costello Meet Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yes.
These are actual movies, and mm-hmm. this is where a lot of the you know, kind of like the comedy premises came from.
Oh yes,
because you would see the Three Stooges in a haunted house and the Old West, and this is the building blocks of all mm-hmm. of those jokes where you take comedians and put them in all these different situations or different planets or in different
yes,
time
yes.
zones, you know, the time periods.
Yeah, there's got Jack and the Beanstalk. You've got Abbott and Costello Meet Captain Kidd. I just like...
Oh, they was
Ride Him Cowboy in the Navy, Buck Privates.
On their TV show where the landlord would say, boys, boys, and they were both in their 60s.
Yeah.
They're both like arthritic. Yeah. And all of, but there's even there, there's one part, Costello is doing all the funny business, and they have Abbott just sitting in a chair with a cup of coffee there, and Costello's is in the forefront doing everything, and Abbott's just there. So Abbott like taps both his hands on the table and goes, nice hot cup of coffee. Oh, and this I love. I've talked about this on my podcast like every other episode. Did you must have seen the TV movie Bud and Lou with Buddy Hackett as Lou Costello yeah. and Harvey Korman.
Oh my God, that was a long time ago.
They look like two guys who had never seen an Abbott and Costello routine. But my favorite thing
it's like
in
when
that,
they try to do a Three Stooges movie, same thing.
Oh yeah. God, yes.
Yeah.
It was and
came out in 1978, Bud and Lou.
There's a death scene there with Buddy Hackett as Lou Costello. And Artie Johnson from Laugh-In plays Eddie Sherman, the manager, and he sneaks in like a cup with like from a candy store, like, and he goes, you know what I got you here, Lou? And he goes, a strawberry malted? And he goes, yeah. And he holds on to it very weakly. Buddy Hackett as Lou Costello takes one sip and goes, you know, I had a lot of strawberry maltage in my day, but this one's the best. And then he falls down dead.
So a strawberry malted killed Lou?
Yeah, strawberry. His manager killed him. Yeah. All they needed was for the doctors to run in and go, you know, he's allergic to strawberries. What are you, a maniac?
How dare you?
You've killed a great comic genius.
Oh, boy. Oh, Harvey man. Korman. And Buddy Hackett. What else we got here? So
I like Jerry Lewis as the Nutty Professor.
That's okay. A classic comic.
Great. Yeah. And there's another one. Once you really watch it and appreciate it, you're really laughing the most when he's Buddy Love.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Barroom Brawler, don't bother me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really, and you see kind of like, especially think as we know more about Jerry Lewis, and I'm like, oh, that's Jerry Lewis.
Yeah.
That's, yes. That's him.
And
that's
it's like, and when he says, now repeat after me, I'll pay attention.
So, and this is a movie that came out, what year was Nutty Professor?
Like 64?
Nutty Professor was, when was that?
And this was, of course, in Jerry Lewis's his heyday when he was making
movies. Oh, yeah, it was 63.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was really, again, it was basically a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde comedy, but it was really funny.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I just remember, like, you know, seeing it as a kid, too, and going, is that the same guy? Is that,
oh,
you
know, yeah.
Because he was so committed to both characters, and they were so different. It's just a really good classic movie.
Things, I think Jerry Lewis is a really good actor. And the thing about the Nutty Professor that makes sense, as you said, is what we know historically of the interviews about Dean and Jerry. Dean Martin, everyone thought, oh, he's the guy with the chicks. He was the guy going back to his room early, getting sleep. Jerry Lewis was the guy.
Oh, yes.
Partying with the showgirls and all that stuff. So it made sense. Like, it makes his character in The Nutty Professor even more like, oh, he was just a playboy. You know, he was like tagging them two at a time or whatever.
And I heard,
he didn't need a magic formula.
Whenever I've asked people who've worked with Lewis what he's like, I've heard that term. Well, he's like a Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
Because they say one minute he's like really funny and a great guy, and then he could turn on you.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Have you had him on the podcast yet?
No. I'd love to have him on the podcast.
Well, it's kind of too late when you think about that.
Sean, are you making notes? Let's talk to Jerry Lewis's publicist.
Let me take a sip of my natural mango essence drink.
Nothing but the best here in the garage.
That's like natural latex. Nature's own styrofoam.
Nature's styrofoam is really
it is delicious.
Just gorgeous.
Yes. It's beautiful and it tastes great. Especially this time of year.
They're fresh off the vine. Get the low-hanging styrofoam. It is ready to go. But no, I want to talk about, you said bring up Jerry Lewis, the king of comedy, which I know is not a comedy film, but it shows you, I think to me, that's probably the most... It feels like, at least, the most accurate insight into who Jerry Lewis really was.
Yes.
You know, of that's who he was, like, that big of a guy. That's an amazing, that film, historically, people don't talk, it's not on a short list of classic, amazing films where I think it should be. Because you've got you've got a young Sandra Bernhardt who plays a Looney Tune fucking to the T. And, you know, a lot of it is made, you know, a lot of the movie was made about Robert De Niro. And, of course, he plays, a good performance. But it's – you got to watch that movie for Jerry Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's so, like, kind of cold, kind of heartless, kind of – and you're just like, wow. That's probably the Jerry Lewis you've had people tell you, that Jekyll and Hyde.
Oh, yeah. And you know what's what's odd? Oh, I originally had asked Johnny Carson to play that part, and really? He didn't want to. So they got Jerry Lewis, who used to, be a right. substitute host sure. on The Tonight Show.
It works with Jerry Lewis.
Oh, yes, it definitely works with him. And it is fascinating to look at him in there.
I think it's, too, when you talk about, and you know, when everyone talks about Scorsese films, they always forget this one.
Oh yeah,
because they are. And granted, it's because Scorsese has this amazing body of classic films. But you're just—I'm always like, The King of Comedy is probably his most underrated movie.
Yeah,
and it is so Jerry Lewis.
And it's what else? I think with King of Comedy.
Well, let's not forget too. Where else are you going to find Robert De Niro playing a comedian?
Oh, yes.
Like a crazy one trying to be a comic. Yeah.
And King of Comedy, I think one of the problems people have with it, there's something very frustrating about it. Like, the audience is frustrated, mm-hmm. the whole characters and everything. It's like, and the way it ends, you're going, ooh,
I know. I think that's part of it, too. Yeah. And I know at the time, people were like, oh, we thought it was going to be Jerry Lewis being wacky.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like, no. And I think it's one of those movies.
I'm sure it was marketed wrong.
Oh, yeah. And I know it was. I remember as a kid going, what is this? So wait, it's Robert De Niro is going to be funny? What's going on? Like, I couldn't quite figure it out. So they marketed it as the King of Comedy.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, oh, and there's one part in King of Comedy that Jerry Lewis told them about, and they put it in the movie, where somebody is on the payphone. There's a woman on the payphone, mm-hmm. and she goes, hey, Jerry, say hello to my brother. My brother's on there, and he goes, oh, I'm in a hurry. And she goes, you should die of cancer. And he said that happened to him in real life.
Yeah. I don't doubt that.
I don't doubt it either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's also a funny thing. If you ever want to listen to it, have you ever listened to those Golden Throats of those CDs that came out? In the
90s? Oh yes, now yes, with on, Anthony Quinn, William Shatner,
people wigging out. There's a great one of a guy who's drunk calling, and he's like,
"What are they?"
The Golden Throats is they got it's like all of these celebrities and major athletes either losing their shit, like it's all those Tommy Lasorda yelling at the press.
Oh,
really? And,
it's got
William Shatner. Yeah. You know, if I want to say sabotage, I'll say sabotage. It's all that.
And there's the classic, the most famous one is Orson Welles doing a voiceover for some commercial, for some radio commercial. And at one point he goes, they say,
in the depths of your ignorance, what do you want?
Yeah.
Yeah. That got animated. Warner Brothers animated it as a Pinky in the Brain episode. Yeah. He's the big brained mouse, and they did it word for word. Yeah.
And they had these two English commercial guys telling him, and they say, can you emphasize in July? And he goes, you tell me how to emphasize in July, and I'll go down on you.
that's a Golden Throats of these CDs. I mean, now you can probably just get them all on YouTube or whatever, but they had a million of those.
Oh, yeah.
They had Buddy Rich. Lou's going fucking nuts in his on a tour bus with his band, which is then there's a... And that song Sabotage by the Beastie Boys, he goes, I'm like Buddy Rich when I fly off the handle. Like, he's screaming at his band. There's another great one where Robert Mitchum, remember in the 80s, he did those Beef, It's What's for Dinner. So he's like, Beef, It's What's for Dinner. And you hear some young guy in the booth go, that's great, Bob. Can we just try to do this and this and this? And he just goes, you'll suck my what? And then the kid goes, that last take was great, Mr. Mitchum. Thank you so much.
Oh, and this one with Paul Anka where he's yelling at his band and he keeps going, and that's just the fucking way it is.
But this one, the one that this is great, Jerry Lewis. This drunk guy is calling. He gets a hold of Jerry Lewis's office or something, and he's like, "Look, I'm friends with Jerry." And Jerry Lewis is on the phone.
Yes,
yes. The guy doesn't know it's Jerry Lewis,
and he's got the wrong disease too. He's saying MS.
Yeah, yeah. Wrong disease, and Jerry Lewis just fucks with this guy.
Oh yeah, that is great.
Brilliant. The guy's like, look, I want to come on the show. Okay, you want to go get some snow? No, yes, no, I want to come on the show. And he just keeps doing that.
And it's like something like, well, what is your name? You know, Irving. So your name's Mr. Ving? No, yeah, Irving.
The guy's drunk.
Can you spell it? I, and he goes, I am Mr. Ving.
And the guy's like, oh, no, Jesus. And
it's actually Lewis at his classic funniest.
It is so brilliant. And the fact that he had the wherewithal, because I got to record this. Mm-hmm. And he's just, you know, a guy at that level has had so many people wanting stuff, free tickets. And yes. And then this guy is, I'm friends with him. Yeah. And he thinks he's yelling at some assistant.
Oh, yes.
And it's, you know, sure, Jerry Lewis wanted to go, I've never heard of you. I don't know who you are. Just strings him along. It's fucking perfect.
Oh, he's like, he's asking for his number to spell the name. He has him respelling the name like about 10 times.
And every time, and Lewis, he's so just like, oh, okay, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So he's so respectful, like in a respectful secretary assistant, and just can't get this simple. It's so funny. So you want to do it on Thursday? Yeah. Okay, so Sunday, we've got you down for Sunday. It's nonstop.
Oh, and there's also Casey Kasem.
Oh, yeah, the Casey Kasem is a great
one. That's a brilliant. He's like, you know, he's talking about, like, oh, and then this is for little Susie, whose dog Puffy died recently. And then he stops and he goes, so I gotta follow this with a song about a little girl's fucking dog dying.
There's so many. I had a copy of that when I first came out in the 90s, and I would listen to it. There was the former manager of the Chicago Cubs in the 80s named Lee Elia. And this was back when the Cubs didn't have lights.
Yeah.
So all of the games were day games. And this was in the early 80s and the Cubs were awful. And he goes on this tirade and he's like, 85% of the population's working. The other 15% come down here and boo my team. It's a playground for the cocksuckers. And there was just like...
And there's a commercial, but this one's on camera. Also Orson Welles, and obviously he's bombed out of his skull. Yeah. And he has to say, you know, the French with their culture and blah, blah, blah.
At some point you wonder, like with Orson Welles, like why are you doing commercials? Yeah. Why bother?
Yeah, and but he, in the commercial, he's so drunk, he's going... You know, you expect him to go, you know, oh, the French. But instead he's like, oh, the French.
I'm telling you guys, find that and listen to that.
Having trouble directing himself. That's pretty much. Well, let's talk about, would you have time for one more? Okay, we'll talk about Chaplin movies because these are also really, really influential. And when you look at a movie like The Gold Rush... And then when you watch The Great Dictator later, you can actually see one's a classic, but then you can see such a progression in his career. It's really amazing. And it's not like The Great Dictator was easy to make either.
Yeah.
That was really – he had a tough time making
because,
that.
Because like America at that point – but in, you know what's funny? Those
wasn't in the war yet.
Those nutsy spies with the Stooges came out before The Great Dictator.
Right. Uh-huh.
I know, and it's like, and America at that time was like,
I don't know, maybe we're going to stay out of this.
This is Europe's problem. Yeah, World War I was brutal, and
it's
Charlie Chaplin was like, no, This is what's going on. I'm going to help get America into the war.
Yeah, and you couldn't even say bad things about Hitler then, like in the papers or stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was a weird time. You look back on it, and you're like, what? No, that couldn't have happened. That can't be true.
When you hear stories of, you know, whatever, we might never know about how, you know, Pearl Harbor, all the top-ranking officials were pulled out of there. FDR knew it was coming, and then just kind of, you know.
Well, if you go and tour, then you can hear the tour guides give you a lot of the inside stuff, mm-hmm. too. Like when I toured Pearl Harbor, they show the official video. But then, you know, the tour guides kind of give you like the unofficial stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, when that bombing occurred, all the aircraft carriers were gone because they knew that would make a big difference in the war if they sank. So they were on maneuvers and all this other interesting things that no one knows for sure. But here's some of the things that you may not know.
Yeah, and FDR like needed the old rumor is he was like dancing in the White House when it happened because he was like now.
Because we just saw the movie about the Enigma Code. Like, did we know? Did Britain let us know that attack was coming? And, you know, we got everything out of the way that we needed to win the war before the attack happened.
Yeah. And justified us to start the war effort.
And especially when you think of, like, radar. Well, we thought it was a flock of geese. Like, really? The radar is that unsophisticated? You thought that was a flock of geese?
Big, giant flock.
Yeah.
Fat. Well, geese back then were a lot bigger.
Well, yeah, they were. They were stronger, and they all carried machine guns and torpedoes. And
instead of squawking, they'd make it sound like...
And they would talk to each other in Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
People didn't know that. Yeah. They would refer to the emperor and all this stuff.
No one said, hey, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't have radar. We can't really tell anything. The difference between anything.
No sense.
So now let's talk about what's your favorite Chaplin movie?
Let's see. You know, it's so funny with Chaplin. He's one of those guys that I watch and admire more than laugh at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always watch him and go, wow, that's great what he did there. And that's really innovative. But I don't remember really laughing out loud at Chaplin.
More of an appreciation than a belly laugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he was, I mean, you know.
He was a craftsman.
The immigrant and the kid and stuff like that. He was, again, kind of showing... What was the part of what was some of the struggles of the times in a comedic way? But it is true. You do kind of go, oh, wow. You know, look what emotion he conveyed in that scene that, again, looks like, oh, he's just being silly with Charlie Chaplin. Yeah. But it's like, no, there's a lot of depth to that. And it, you know, if you think about that now in this era, you know, you can talk and say all these things with the emotion, and he couldn't. I mean, he had such a limited way to express the emotion, and he did it.
Oh, yeah.
In black and white films, which was amazing to me.
And I think he even said to one of his actresses, as a direction, he said, give a bad performance. And I think that was because a great performance back then was very theatrical.
Right.
And so...
Making the transition from silent to talkies.
Yeah.
Well, also, like, I think maybe he was also bringing the stage, because you have stage actors coming to this new medium.
And you have vaudeville, too.
And vaudeville, which was so big and so over the top, and you had to fill the whole theater with your physicality that it did seem... ridiculous.
And you also, like we're talking about, you watch these movies as products of the time. Like, you look at Gold Rush at 1925, finding gold.
Yes.
And you look at, like, Depression. Like, that was kind of, it even played out in a fantasy way where, like, look, we're all poor. We'd love to find gold. And it has, again, a product of the time. You have to realize what people were going through when they were watching this film.
And
too.
He was a tramp.
Right. He's a hobo.
Back then, people had no money.
Yeah.
They were being kicked out of their homes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was like championing the poor person.
The little guy.
And
yeah.
There's one movie, I forget which one, where he comes over on a boat with a bunch of immigrants.
I think it's The Immigrant in 1917.
Oh, that would make sense.
That makes sense. Yeah. That's like The Immigrant movie. What was that one about?
That's like saying... What's that movie that has the Titanic in it?
Yeah.
What movie is that?
What's the Godzilla movie about the big tall lizard that fights, smashes buildings? Well, awesome, man. That's our episode, you guys. That was a lot of fun. I love talking about this.
Oh, love it. Yeah. And like we said, seek out these movies. You won't be disappointed. Just don't look at them through contemporary eyes. Look at them as they were products of the time and the building blocks of modern comedy. And you will enjoy them so much more.
Yeah. And then, you know, if anybody, you're watching these for the first time or have any recommendations, again, go to our message board, go to the Facebook fan page and let us know. You know,
there's many we didn't get to or cover.
This page is three long. And it's
We didn't talk about W.C. Fields and Laurel and Hardy. There's a million W.C.
Fields
we
has about. So many kind of little side jokes that you're just like, whoa, that was an awesome
joke.
Maybe
we'll do one just on the silent comedies because we could just get into
Sure.
Yeah, you know, Buster Keaton and Harold Lloyd. I think it'd be
great.
We
didn't even scratch the surface. No, we didn't. Which were amazing films. So. All right, well, Gilbert, thanks for being on the show. Where can people find you on the internet and see and listen to your podcast?
Oh, since you brought it up. I hate to plug myself, but since you mentioned it, I have a podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. You could hear it on gilbertgottfried.com. And what was it?
iTunes.
And SideshowNetwork.tv. Facebook is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, Facebook. And my Twitter is at RealGilbert. And my Twitter is a very expensive hobby, I found out.
How is it expensive?
Yeah, what are you spending money on exactly?
It's a free platform.
No, it's a long story. Yeah.
I think I'd like to hear it.
That's a great story. Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the show and talking about this. All right, guys. You know, like us on the Facebook fan page. And again, positive reviews on iTunes always help.
And definitely support the store. Like we said, $20 a year, get something. We really appreciate it. It helps pay for everything.
And can I mention Patreon here for my podcast?
Sure.
Patreon. Yeah. And become a member on my podcast.
So. You get to pay for your Twitter account.
Yes. Right? Yes. Yeah. And for God's sakes, once again, let's tell you, please see Ernest Goes to Camp.
Yes.
Truly.
My favorite is Ernest Saves Christmas. Because
Yes. Well, that's where we
agree to disagree.
Part ways. Yeah.
Santa's in the slammer. Come on, guys. That was from the trailer. All right, guys. And of course, we are on Comedy Film Nerds is on at Comedy Film Nerds on Twitter. Follow us. You know,
For free.
I don't know what Gilbert's spending.
Side deal is.
It's because I lost the job because of my jokes on Twitter. Jesus. Must I explain every joke to you two?
That one, yes.
So now, who is the name of the first baseman? Yeah. This is where I'm unclear.
Did you lose a job on Facebook?
Well, on my, on Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast on Facebook. And GilbertGottfried.com. I've lost several.
We're going to really need Levelator for this show.
Yeah.
I just remembered in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. It seems like he screws up a line at one point, like starts to forget, because Costello goes, "Mr. Broadhurst."
And they were cranking him out so fast, they probably just like, we don't have time for another take. All right, guys, that's our show. Liking us on all the social media is a thing you can do for free that helps us. Those numbers actually do help with sponsorship.
And I just want to say, Gilbert, it's great to see you again. I haven't seen you in many years.
I was wondering where you were.
I remember when I opened for Gilbert back in Philly, I was like, in my early 20s. I remember you asked me, the first thing you said to me is like, what appetizer should I get? And I said, I'm not sure which one's better. And then he went, I'll just order all of them.
This is are the professional conversations that are
had. Yeah, this is what happens in a comic club. These professional conversations, a headliner comes in, throws his money around, and buys all the appetizers.
Yeah, you know, you think it's all like Frank and Dino and Sammy and Vegas.
It's just potato skins and chicken fingers.
Nachos. No, I'll just get all of them.
Get the mozzarella sticks. I don't give a shit. All right, guys. Well, that's our show. Thank you so much, Gilbert, for coming out. My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.